And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. What happened to the weekend? We say that every Monday, huh? Went zooming by, even with the bad weather. Bitterly cold out there. Our temperature has rocketed all the way up to 10 above here. The wind chill still puts it slightly below zero. Pretty gusty out there today. Well, it's a good day to stay indoors, stay warm, and talk about wine. That'll keep you warm. And we're going to talk about that on the first portion of the program today. I do want to remind you that coming up later, we're going to be chatting with a local man, Chuck Thomas, who has interesting news about some prints of the city of Butler. These are artistic renderings that go back, 100, 150 years. And also about some pictures of old-time downtown Butler. So anxious to chat with Chuck. He'll be with us later on the program today. Our first guest, though, is Bill Gordy from Bushy Run Winery. Easy for you to say. Bill, nice to have you with us here today.
Dave, thanks you for having me on.
And we're talking to Bill because, well, first of all, it's a wonderful regional winery we want to talk about. But secondly, this coming Saturday, it's our WISR Wine Festival, our annual wine festival at the Butler Days Inn this Saturday. And we'll give you the details on that in a moment, but Bushy Run Winery is one of the wineries that's going to be here. First time for you, right?
Absolutely. Our wine festival. We're excited to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Bushy Run Winery. I assume that you're named after the battlefield outside of Jeannette there?
We are named after the battlefield outside Jeannette, which was the turning point of the French and Indian War, which is the reason we speak English instead of French today.
True. Had that war gone the other way, we would be, first of all, it would be Fort Duquesne instead of Fort Pitt, and we'd be speaking French.
Oui.
Yeah. For folks who aren't familiar with the location, I think everybody knows where Greensburg is or Jeannette. It's very close to Jeannette, right?
Correct.
A few miles outside of Greensburg. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you've been in business there for a few years now, Bill?
We've been making wine for about 10 years. We've had our license for 5 years. And we've been very humbled by the response to our wines. And it has been a fun journey. Family-run winery. Mm-hmm. And we're very, very excited to be here at Butler.
You have brought a selection of your wines with you, and I'm very impressed. I'm not a wine connoisseur. I never let that bother me whenever I go to a wine festival because I just taste and enjoy, and what I like, I like. What I don't like, I don't like. But, wow, what an array. Can we talk about some of these? Because you've got some very, very interesting wines that you make down there.
Yes, Dave. We run the gamut from sweet to dry, red to white, and we have different wines too that are very, very appealing to.
Well, talk about some. Can you see all those, or is my laptop in your way?
I'm good.
Okay, you can see.
The first one we have there is the wine that we're primarily known for. It's our lemon wine. It's a wine made out of only lemons. There's no grape in it at all.
I have never heard of lemon wine before.
It's a great summer wine, and like we were talking about, it's primarily for summer, but we've had people at Christmas time wanting to drink lemon wine, which tastes just like a Mike's Hard Lemonade with more alcohol and less fizz and great to drink. Very, very refreshing. We've had people that said that it's very versatile, too. We've added strawberries to it to make it a pink lemonade. We've added Turner's iced tea to it. 50-50 blend makes a drunken Arnie Palmer, which is very popular.
And I know what you're talking about. Palmer used to ask for that when you come in off the golf course.
Absolutely, yes.
Half lemonade and half iced tea.
And we do that with our Lemon Kiss wine. We blend that together.
I didn't even know you could ferment lemons to make
wine. It's a little tough to do, being that the lemons are so high in acid, and the yeast usually doesn't like that, but we found a way to do that. So it's been a very successful wine for us.
Well, that explains why I've never heard of it before.
Yes.
Pretty rare. So what else do you offer?
We also offer on a dry side. We have a dry red called Noray. It's a Pennsylvania grape. Ours came out tasting like cherry with oak and a little vanilla in it. Usually the Noray has some peppers in it, but the yeast that we use brought the peppers down and brought the fruit flavors out in it. So it's very tasty with that. A nice, easy drinking, low tannin wine with that one.
Mm-hmm.
On the white side, we have our Riesling. Riesling is nice and crisp. It tastes like apples with apricots in it. Our Sauval Blanc is tart green apples and tart pears. It's a grape also grown here in Pennsylvania.
Now, Blanc is, that's French for white.
French for white, right? And there, very good.
Okay. My French is very limited.
It's okay. It's all good. We get into our sweeter wines. We have Black Watch, which is a blackberry Isabella wine. It's sweet and grapey on the tip of your tongue, and then goes tart with a lingering blackberry finish with that.
Isabella, that's a type of grape?
Isabella is a type of grape grown here in Pennsylvania. With that wine there, we do have a few wines that we actually donate $1 back to the Bushy Run Battlefield, and that is one of the ones because we like to support the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
The next one we have is a General Braddock. That's a pink Catawba, so it's going to be grapey on the tip of your tongue, and then tart, like a grapefruit finish to it. So it's very, very tasty there, too.
Another name from Pennsylvania's military history, or
yes.
Western Pennsylvania military history.
Absolutely. The next one we have is a white wine. It's a diamond wine. Diamond's actually a girl's best friend, as we all know. And this one tastes like an adult Capri Sun. With that, too.
Okay, good description.
Yes. A new one that we have that we've just brought out this year is called Mim's Moscato. Mim is the name of my wife's Aunt Kathy, who helps us at our farmers markets in the summer, so we decide to honor her with a wine. This one's made out of an orange Muscat grape grown here in Pennsylvania up in the vineyards in near Lake Erie.
Mm-hmm.
This one tastes like an orange dreamsicle, so it's very tasty on that one.
Boy, I tell you, your descriptions, they make me want to try these.
Oh, absolutely.
That's really, great. Really good.
And we find that people want to know what they're going to be tasting when they come to the show and want to taste. We like to tell them, hey, here's what you're going to be looking for. And a lot of times they know the taste. They just can't put a name to it. So we're there to help them out with that, too.
Wine tastes like a dreamsicle. How
yes,
about that?
Yeah. Absolutely. The last wine that we have is a grape called Traminet. Traminet is a white high acid grape grown up here in Pennsylvania and middle Pennsylvania. Ours, we actually sweetened it up. We had a lot of people asking for like a Moscato type wine or an ice wine, which are very, very sweet wines. So we sweetened this one up, and the wine actually gives off a honey and green apple taste. And that's just the grape. There's no honey or green apples in that wine. That's just the grape sweetened up.
Hmm. I do know a little bit about ice wine, only from visiting wineries in Ontario.
Yes.
We go up to the Shaw Festival there at Niagara-on-the-Lake, and they got wineries all over the place up there. And ice wine is very expensive.
Very expensive.
It comes in a real little bottle, and it costs a whole lot of money.
A whole lot of money. And what we have to do to make ice wine, at least here in Pennsylvania, is we have to let the grapes actually freeze on the vine. And it's got to be below 32 degrees for 10 hours before we're allowed to pick them to call them ice wine. If not, you may see it's called late harvest wine.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a Vidal Blanc ice wine that we didn't bring today. But the ice wine is usually higher alcohol. The ice wine that we have is a little over 15% alcohol by volume. And it gives off a nice butterscotch citrus flavor. It's a Vidal Blanc ice wine.
But this Traminet, tastes kind of like
it. Traminet kind of tastes like it, but you're not paying those ice wine prices, like you said.
My goodness, Bill, how did you ever learn all this about wine? You said you've been making wine for about 10 years now. I guess you learn as you go along, huh?
I learned the hard way. In fact, with experience, I've learned many ways now not to make wine. But the first one I got was a kit wine for Christmas that my wife had got me. And every day I came home and sat and looked at the box and didn't know what to do. Started reading up on it, started the wine, and it was really, really good. And all of a sudden, it was really, really bad. So I still have a case of that downstairs, and every time I get all full of myself, I'll go and open up a bottle of that and force myself to drink a glass.
Well, you've improved rapidly since then, that's for sure.
Yes, I read up on that, and actually the wines have got much, much better.
We're talking with Bill Gordy, in case you've joined us a little bit late, and that happens sometimes during the noon hour, especially with people listening in the car. Bill Gordy is the owner of Bushy Run Winery, and Harrison City is the address, but it's near Jeanette, Greensburg, Harrison City. They're all pretty close to
correct,
each other there.
Correct. We're Murraysville, Harrison City, Jeanette, Greensburg, Irwin. We're right in that area.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is where the Bushy Run battlefield is, and it's from that battle that you take the name of your winery.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what we're trying to help them by selling some wines to help them out, too.
That was in the Bushy Run. That was French and Indian War, wasn't it?
French and Indian, correct.
Yeah. There's another place quite close to there, Hannistown. And there was a battle there. That was in Revolutionary War, though.
That was the last battle of the Revolutionary War as the troops were retreating back to Detroit to get across the river. They came through Hannistown, which had been the county seat at the time, and kind of massacred everybody that was living there. So it's we do have that. They've reconstructed the area, and they do a reenactment there every year, too.
I did a program with them a year or two ago, and when you mentioned it was the county seat, they were reenacting their once-a-year court that they set up there, you know, way back when, before Greensburg became the capital of Westmoreland County. Well, this is a very rich area right around there. And you're going to have a big announcement this spring because you're going to be having a new location for your winery.
We have finally found a location. People have wanted to know where can we come get your wines when we're not here at a show, and we've not been able to define just the right location. But in the spring, we will have a big announcement. We will be looking to purchase some property and to put in a tasting room where people can come on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays, grab a bottle of wine, maybe a food truck there, somebody playing guitar, and just sit back and relax after a tough work week.
Well, that's a nice day trip for folks from around here, not even a day.
An hour away, so we're good with that.
It's not that bad. Bill Gordy is with us. He's going to be one of the wineries at the WISR Butler County Wine Festival this Saturday, this coming Saturday at 26th, at the Butler Days Inn. We have two sessions, which we've had for, past decade now, because this has gotten so big. We need all that room. Two big rooms at the Days Inn. There's an afternoon session. It runs from 2 to 5, if that's convenient with you. Some folks like that because they don't have to worry about driving at night. There's also an evening session that runs from 6 to 9, if that fits your schedule a little better. Tickets are available pre-sale here at WISR. We're at 252 Pillow Street. Or you can get them online pre-sale as well at our website, WISR680.com. $20 pre-sale. They'll also be available at the door this Saturday at the Butler Days Inn for $25. And your ticket gets you an official wine tasting glass. You can taste all the wine you want.
Absolutely.
We have some wonderful vendors there, too, and there'll be food available, and it's just a nice day. You've been going to these festivals around the region, I guess, the tri-state area, huh?
We have been doing festivals for the past 4 years, getting our name out there, building our brand. We've had some nice people take us under their wing, help us out with this. But now we're actually trying to repay that. We've helped two other individuals, one here in the Pittsburgh area, get his license and start his winery, another one out in the Lancaster area. We're kind of mentoring her out there with her winery, too. So we're helping out. We're trying to give back. We're trying to pay back the benefits and the just the help that everyone's given us too.
It's Pennsylvania Dutch country out there in
Absolutely,
Lancaster.
Yes.
Well, it used to be that if you wanted to visit a winery or go on a wine tour maybe on a Saturday, try to hit two or three of them, it was long-range travel, but the number of local and regional wineries has just exploded, Bill, over the past decade.
It has really, really come up as we've had our license. We've watched a whole lot more wineries come online. So it's been we're trying to benefit the Pennsylvania agriculture for the grapes grown here in Pennsylvania, trying to help those farmers out, and we're having a good time and helping them out with it too.
I noticed when you were describing some of your wines that you mentioned several times using Pennsylvania grapes. That helps the regional economy, does it not?
Exactly. We like to try to keep our money here in Pennsylvania, help other people out with that too. Our tax money stays here. It helps out the local area. So we're trying to benefit everybody.
Wineries can do different things. They can grow their own grapes. Some do. It takes a real skill here in this area. I mean, you can have a vineyard, but it's not, you know, automatic like it is on the shores of Lake Erie or along the banks of the Rhine in Germany, where, you know, you can stick a grapevine in the ground and you can't kill it. It takes tender, loving care here, but some grapes are grown here in Pennsylvania, but many wineries simply import juice and then, you know, make the wine from that.
We do have some juice that we bring in from South America. We have a Carmenere Red Zinfandel blend that we call Red Coat that's almost ready for bottle. We bring that in from South America because Carmenere is just not grown here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we tried to, as much as I've tried to get my Cabernet from here in Pennsylvania, it's still not up to my standard, so we've been bringing Cabernet in from California to get the good grapes out there. Their growing season's longer, mm-hmm. More temperate than ours here, so that's why we've been able to get that juice in.
We do grow grapes here in Pennsylvania, though. I mean, I can remember when I was a kid, well, teenager, that if you were talking wine, domestic wine here in the U.S., it was California. I mean, that was about the only place, maybe a few spots in New York. Now there are many, many states where there are vineyards and wineries, and we're finding out that you can indeed grow grapes in other places other than just California.
Absolutely. There's different grapes. Obviously, the Pennsylvania grapes are going to be cold weather grapes because of our weather that's out there today. The grapes that are coming from California are usually coming from France, or the French grapes, the Cabernets. You know, the Cibals, things like that are coming from the Chardonnays. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to grow the grapes here. Different grapes, different flavor, different mouthfeel to it here in Pennsylvania. But you see them popping up everywhere. We have some in the Midwest, which are different grapes than what we're growing here, too.
You mentioned, Bill and I were chatting for a few minutes before we went on the air today. He's lining up all these wonderful wines, and I'm looking at them. Did you say you have some sort of a fruit Shiraz that you...
I do. We have a raspberry Shiraz where we use local raspberries, and we do bring in some Shiraz from California, which is a cherry-tasting grape. But when we blend the cherry of the Shiraz with our raspberry, add a little bit of sugar to it to sweeten it up, it comes out tasting like cotton candy.
Mm.
And we have some people that really like the one. It's been a very popular one for us.
I seem to remember somebody telling me, and again, I'm not a wine expert, but Shiraz either originated in Australia or it's extremely big in Australia.
Extremely big in Australia. Down along the southern and west coast is primarily where that's grown. It's very, very tasty down there.
Have you been watching the tennis from the Australian Open on TV?
I have not. Haven't saw that one.
Over 100 degrees. They've got fruit that's rotting on the vine because it's cooking on the vine. It's so hot down there. Of course, it's midsummer.
Yeah, exactly. Start picking that and send it to me. I'll take it.
Land it down under. Do you make wine all year round, or is that just a seasonal thing, Bill? Or
we do make wine all year round. Depends on when our fruit comes in that we can actually try to get different wines going. The lineup that we have and we'll be having on Saturday is our winter wine set. During the summer, we will then transition over to our summer wines, which are more of our, we've got a Mama's Mango, which is a blend of mango juice and diamond wine. So we'll blend that together.
Your descriptions of your wines just make my mouth water.
Oh, yes.
They really do.
We try to prevent scurvy with that wine, is what we're trying to do with that one. We've got our Battlefield Blush coming out, which is our Concord Niagara, and that's another wine that will benefit the battlefield. Our lemon will be out then. And we're trying some different things with our lemon. We're going to be adding some frozen strawberries to it, make it a pink lemonade. So that's another thing we're going to try this year.
How long does it take to make wine? Well, first of all, the process, you take the juice of the grape, and then you add yeast to it, right?
Well, the winemaker has to select his yeast and figure out what does he want. Does he want it to be peppery? Does he want it to be fruity? Or does it have flower notes coming out in it? So we'll choose the right yeast for what we want to do. We ferment it, and we add, actually the yeast turns the sugar into alcohol and carbon dioxide. Once that's done fermenting, then it's either transition to oak, and with our dry reds, we like to try to oak those for anywhere from 2 to 4 years.
When you say oak them, you mean put them in like oak barrels?
In oak barrels, yes. Huh. And we let them sit there and just...
The flavor of the oak eventually is absorbed into the wine?
Absolutely. The wine goes into the oak barrel, comes back out depending on temperature changes in the winery, and gets that nice oak flavor in it. The oak that we use actually will bring out a nice mocha flavor at the end. So it's a mocha chocolate taste.
And this can take years?
Years. Wow. Years. We found out our Malbec, which is going on 3 years old, still not ready yet. It's still not where we want it to be. But eventually, probably next year, we'll start looking at bottling that one.
But some wines don't take anywhere near that long.
No. We can get the Pennsylvania grapes. We can usually ferment them, and within 6 months, they're back in the bottle. High-acid grapes.
What's another grape that I've heard of but don't know that much? But Catawba. Have you heard of that?
Oh, Catawba is a very good one. That's our General Braddock, is a blend of Catawba and Fredonia, both Pennsylvania grapes. And the Catawba actually tastes like a nice grapefruit that you're tasting. And what we like to do with that is add a little bit of Fredonia to give it a little grapey flavor on the tip of your tongue, and then it's nice and tart on the end like a grapefruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had that. Pink Catawba.
Pink Catawba, very tasty.
Yeah. And I've always liked the name... the Niagara grape, I guess, because it's from the region. That's a white wine, right?
Niagara is a white grape, and it's grown in the Niagara Escarpment, which is known up in the Erie area, the Lake Erie and mm-hmm. Ontario area. Nice and tasty, has that nice white grape taste to it. But we're actually using that for a blend. Now, we've got a new wine coming out. That as soon as the government goes back to work, we'll have our label approved. But it's a cranberry Niagara blend, so we're looking at that one. It's an exciting one that we're getting ready for.
Well, you're always the experimental winemaker, are you not?
We try to ferment a little bit of different things. We tried different flavors. A couple of years ago, we fermented candy canes and made a peppermint wine, which was very tasty, very popular right around the holiday season.
I love your label, by the way. It's most attractive. And is that a depiction of a battle? I can't see from this distance.
The label is actually the charge of the 42nd Highlanders at the Battle of Bushy Run.
Oh, okay.
We like to pay homage to the battle, to those that came before us, and that's the reason we call our winery Bushy Run Winery.
Is that kind of like a copy of a print or something?
It is a print. A nice picture of the depiction of the battle between the English and the Indians that were there.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of the font and so on that you use, that's a big part of selling wine, don't you think?
We like to try.
You have an attractive label, it makes people want to try it.
Yes, we like to try to keep those labels, the name of the winery and the labels, period to how it would be printed back then, as much as we can.
Some of the wines that you've brought to showcase here today, and folks, we've got them lined up here in the studio. I've had many people who have walked past the window, Bill, and said, can we come in after you finish the interview? Some of your bottles are clear glass. Some are green glass, green tinted. Is that just happenstance, or do certain wines need to be in colored bottles?
Certain wines do need to be in colored bottles, where sunlight would actually affect the darker wines.
Uh-huh.
So that's why we use different bottles for that.
So generally reds, I guess.
Correct.
In a darker bottle.
Very good.
Right? See, I'm learning a little bit here, folks. You got the reds, you got the whites. Bill mentioned a dry wine. I think that was your Riesling. Is that right?
My Riesling, my Sauvignon Blanc, and my Noiré are all on the dry side, which means they have no sugar to them, or very, very little sugar added just to get the edge off the wine.
Some people might say sour.
That would be a good description.
But wine connoisseurs would say, oh, no. The other kind is too sweet. We like the dry.
Yes, where there's no sugar, where all the sugar's been fermented out by the yeast.
Hmm. Well, gosh, I can't imagine that you haven't had quite a bit of popularity with this wide variety of flavors here.
We have been humbled by the response that we've got. It's been 4 years. We have grown from our customers. We've tried to listen to our customers too, where they've told us some different things that they've done. With our one wine, they said, we drink this wine with pepperoni pizza all the time. So now we market it as our pepperoni pizza wine. It's just listening to them, telling us what they want, and trying some different things, too.
Popularity of wine is growing.
Very much so.
If you went back a generation, or certainly two, this was kind of, an impotent iron region, Everybody liked their beer and maybe shot to go with it. I never cared for that myself.
Yeah.
But the popularity of wine, it just continues to expand. Even on the Turner Classic Movies, the TCM channel, they've got a wine club for, this is the wine to watch, a Francis Ford Coppola film or a Robert Mitchum film or something like that. I'm just amazed when I see that kind of stuff.
It's very interesting that once I got into wine, it's you hear it in a lot of songs where a lot of songs mention wine and a lot of movies are mentioning wine. And when you watch TV, everybody's sitting around with friends drinking wine, which is how wine should be consumed. It goes well with friends.
Well, if you want to taste some of these, will you have several of these varieties in Butler this Saturday?
I will.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can taste them, folks. You can taste all you want with the price of your admission ticket and your tasting glass. But you will have bottles available for purchase, too, of course.
We do have bottles available for purchase, and the more you buy, the bigger the discount.
Mm. And all of our wineries will do that. They'll have tasting, of course, and then if you find something you really like or you think you might like or somebody you know might like, you're welcome to buy a bottle or two. Or we've seen people going out with dollies, believe it or not.
And we like those people.
not everybody, but we've seen people go out with dollies. The Butler County WISR Wine Festival is this coming Saturday. And that's the 26th of January already.
26th already.
I'm never real unhappy, though, to see January in the rearview mirror, Let's get through this month, and then we can start dreaming about the end of winter.
It's okay. Spring's coming.
We've had our WISR Wine Festival in late January every year since we started. It's just a fun time. It doesn't matter whether the weather is cold. 4 or 5 years ago, we had absolutely brutally cold day with snow and ice and everything else. The day of the wine festival, it was still packed. This time of year, people want to get out and have a little fun.
We are looking forward to attending our first one, and we've heard a lot of great things about the show. That's why we wanted to be in the show this year.
Again, folks, there are two sessions this Saturday. There's an afternoon session from 2 to 5, and then there's an evening session from 6 to 9. You can come to either one. Come to both if you want to. Pre-sale tickets available here at WISR, 252 Pillow Street. If you want to walk in and get them, you can also get them online at WISR680.com/winefest. That's an easy way to do it. Purchased in advance, they're $20. You can get them at the door on Saturday for $25. And again, that includes all your wine tasting. You get an official tasting glass, and you get a wristband, and you can just go around to the various booths that the wineries have set up and sample and taste and buy if you want to. We'll have food available, too, and there's some wonderful vendors there. It's really a nice day this coming Saturday. And we certainly look forward to welcoming Bill Gordy and, for the first time, Bushy Run Winery this Saturday. Bill, it's nice to meet you. Goodness gracious, thanks for coming up here.
Very
today.
Much appreciate you having us on, Dave. Very, very, very much appreciate it.
And thanks for bringing all your wine samples, too. Just looking at them, my mouth is watering here.
I think I'm going to get out of here with a few less wine bottles today.
Well, I have still more program to do, so I'll have to hold off for a little while. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Chuck Thomas about some very interesting prints, old-time prints of the city of Butler. Stick around for that here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We will be back in just a few minutes.
For most kids, the glass is half full. They have access to fresh milk, a vital source of calcium, potassium, and protein. But for 1 in 6 kids in Pennsylvania, the glass is half empty. They face hunger and malnutrition. By supporting the Fill a Glass with Hope program, you can help bring fresh milk to Pennsylvania food banks so every kid can have what every kid deserves, a full life. Please donate at feedingpa.org/milk. Brought to you by the American Dairy Association Northeast, Pennsylvania Dairymen's Association, and Feeding PA.
Hey, finished your homework yet?
Almost. What's on your laptop?
Oh, it's a site to help me talk with you about alcohol.
Is this going to take all night?
No. In fact, it says take it one subject at a time.
Why now?
Well, you're at the age where you need to know the facts about alcohol.
But I'm only 8.
It says that 1 in 3 kids have already tried alcohol by your age.
Really?
Talk with your kids about alcohol. Learn more at knowwhennohow.org. A message from the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board.
Handling grief is tough and lonely. After the loss of a loved one, who can really understand how you feel, how grief affects your life every single day? Well, Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's meticulously designed to help ease your emotional pain and help you fill in the gaps when you're lonely. Men and women are invited to attend. Yes, men too are realizing it's okay to express their feelings in a small group setting. Over the last 20 years, we've helped so many people work through their grief. We have 5 programs, a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, for those who have lost a pet, and individual sessions. Our own trained and bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller, conducts each session personally. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Get your tickets now for the 13th Annual Butler County Wine Festival, presented by WISR and Deal Automotive. Scheduled for January 26th at the Butler Days Inn, the festival features 11 Pennsylvania wineries, food and specialty vendors, food samples, and a basket raffle to benefit the March of Dimes. Choose from 2 sessions, 2 to 5 or 6 to 9. Your $20 ticket includes a souvenir wine tasting glass, a voucher for our refreshment booth, and shopping with our vendors. Tickets are limited for each session, so get yours today. For complete details and tickets, visit butlerradio.com.
Welcome back, good friends. We move into the next segment of our It's Your Turn program today. And, boy, I think you're going to find this interesting. We're going to be chatting with Chuck Thomas about some really fascinating early prints, early artist renderings of the city of Butler that date all the way back to the 1800s, the late 1800s. I also want to talk about some photographs as well. But first of all, let me welcome our guest, Chuck Thomas. Nice to have you here, my friend. Good to talk to you.
Well, thanks, Dave. I really appreciate you inviting me. And I think the people will like this.
You shared these prints with me a few days ago when we were making arrangements for the program. And when you pulled out this print of Butler, I said, oh, I think I've seen that before. But it was a huge one, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago that was available around town?
Yeah, it was pretty big, and it was one of the first ones I did. And, in fact, it was the first one I did. And never thought about the size, and it was costly to frame it. So I decided to shrink them a little bit, and this is, you know, fit in a, you know, a standard size frame.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is not small by any means, but it's not a huge poster size thing.
You can mat that and have that in a nice frame, and it's beautiful.
I'm interested in how this is done. I see a date on here, 1896.
Right, that's right.
So what Butler looked like in 1896. If you could imagine, now obviously they didn't have aerial photography then because this is before the Wright brothers, so we didn't have airplanes. But if there had been aerial photography, this is kind of what it would look like, right?
Well, yes, and it probably would have put them out of business, the panoramic artists, or what they call bird's eye city artists,
mm-hmm.
Because in the mid-1920s, they went out of business because of the aerial photography.
This would be a very specialty type of artist. Folks, there's hundreds of buildings drawn on here, hundreds of them.
It really is.
Plus, you see the streets are labeled, and probably most prominently, at least when I first look at this print, is the Conequenessing Creek as it winds through the city of Butler. And, of course, this is 1896, so when you get down into the West End and the Island section, the creek's in a different place now than
it was back then, right? Yeah, that's exactly right.
Army Corps of Engineers rerouted the Conequenessing as a flood control measure.
Right, that's right. And
but this shows you where it used to be.
Yeah. And then there's numbers on the buildings. The people highlight their buildings, and I tell you, it's been a hobby business for me.
Where did you find this print,
John? Well, actually, the Butler one. I was in a fellow's business, and I saw this map and this print, and I says, "Boy, is this nice?" I said, "I've never seen anything like this." And he says, "Oh, yeah." He says, "We've had it in here for years, you know." And I said, "Do you want to sell it?" And that was the first thing out of my mind, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Well, we'd have to get top dollar." And I says, "Well, how much do you want?" He says, $50. Man, I had that money in his hand quick. And then I bought a second one for $65. And I sold both of them after I made copies of mm-hmm. them.
So you reproduced them.
I reproduced those in negatives, and I sold those for $1,500 a piece.
Wow.
So I made a real good return. The people didn't know really what they had, and I didn't either at the time, but the people that were buying them from me knew what I had. And I just really loved doing them, and I've met so many wonderful people. And if there's people that are struggling, you know, like, you know, I when I was in Pittsburgh and when I did my Pittsburgh map, this man was playing the bongo drums, and I was in seeing a meeting with someone, and I come out and I said, "I got to go. I have a meter I got to fill." And here the man that was, you know, with his bongo drums, he put a dollar in the meter for me.
Hmm.
And it saved me like a $300 fine. And I went over and he saw, "No, you don't owe me anything." And I gave him 10 of these prints of Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh one. And he says, "Wow, these are nice." He says, "Boy, I could probably sell those." And I says, "Yep."
Go right ahead, huh?
And I gave him 10 of them. And I says, "You put the money in your pocket. You just saved me a bundle, you mm-hmm. know." So it's really a nice. Dave, when I first got started in this, I had trouble, you know, getting contacts. And I called one historical society in Pittsburgh, and it wasn't the Heinz Historical Society. And they would never call me back. I'd called three times. So I said, "Well, heck with these people." And then a friend of mine says, "Well, Chuck, I can open the doors at Pittsburgh for you. He says, I know everybody. And the next day, we drove in, and I met with Frances Scaife. You know, her father was Mellon.
Yes.
And she wonderful person.
Mellon Scaife, well, that's opening doors, that's for sure.
It really did. I couldn't even believe it.
I just want to make sure with my engineer. Do we have Chuck close enough to the mic? We have good enough volume on him?
You want me to move from?
Yeah, a little bit closer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Now, if you want me to continue to tell...
Oh, yes, please. I just want to make sure that we were getting good volume there.
So I says, who do you know in Pittsburgh? He says, I know everybody. He says, when do you want to go? Do you want to go tomorrow? And I says, well, don't you have to call these people? And they says, they'll be there for me. And so I went in. I met her at Station Square. She had an office at Station Square. And they had six desks behind her with girls sitting there. And the very first thing she said to me was, do you go by Chuck? Or I said, yes, I do. And she says, well, my name's Franny. I couldn't believe it. You know, I said, oh, I can't call you Franny. You know? And she said, oh, no. She says, how much money do you need from the Scaife Foundation to get this project off the ground? I said, Mrs. Scaife, I don't need any money. I need some doors open. And I tell you what, she opened the doors for me. And like the Carnegie Library, I wanted to borrow some information on these maps and everything. And I wanted to borrow the books to take home with me. And I says, I found out you can't take those books home with you. They don't allow it. And she pointed to a person and said, get Carnegie Library on, you know, the phone, and got the head librarian. I was standing there, and she says, I'm sending Chuck Thomas over to meet with you. He's going to show you his driver's license so you know that's the person that's coming over. And you lend him anything he wants, and I'll stand behind it. And she was just really a wonderful person.
Now, for folks who might be interested in getting a copy of this, it's still big, but it's not huge poster size anymore. This print of Butler, aerial depiction of Butler in 1896. Are they available locally, and for how much, Chuck?
Yes. Well, you know what? Being that it's a hobby business, I decided I'm going to... these prints, I sold them for, I think it was... $15 to $29 a piece. But, you know, sometimes it was people just, you know, just didn't have the money, you know? And there's a lot of people that are struggling. And I decided this year, because I really see a lot, you know, people just, you know, they're out of work or whatever. I lowered the price to $5 a piece.
$5?
Yep, $5 a piece. You can have... You know, any one of my maps for $5 a piece.
How do they get in touch with you, or where do they go?
The best is by email for me, but I do have a phone number. My email is C like Chuck, M like Michael, T like Tom, A like Apple, M like Michael, T like Tom at gmail.com. Or my phone number is 724-996-6218. I had to think there for a minute. I never call myself.
I do the same thing. Plus, these days, all you got to do is push a button. You don't have to dial all the numbers. And so people don't remember numbers anymore. I want to double check that email address. cmtamt@gmail.com.
Right.
We'll give that again before we wrap up here today.
You know, Dave, I wanted to say something about Mrs. Scaife. When I was with her, she says, get Stephen Laurent on the phone. Well, I didn't know who that was. And here he made a book of Pittsburgh, a photography, you know, it's all photos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, you know, tremendous. And She introduced me to this Stephen Laurent on the phone. He lived out near Chicago or something. And she says, Stephen, this is a nice young man. I want you to help him out. And you know what? We became good friends. And here, about 6 years ago, I hadn't talked to him for a long time. I decided to call him, and here he had passed away. And on the internet, I didn't know you could put somebody's name in there. You know, I'm sort of computer illiterate. And here, when I pulled it up, this is unbelievable. His first interview was with Hitler, and his best friend was Winston Churchill.
Wow.
And here, him and I became friends, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't know all this. You know, so.
Well, let me talk a little bit more, try to describe this print of Butler from 1896 to the people. The major streets at that time are listed, and you mentioned there are some buildings depicted here that are still around.
Oh,
many
yeah,
buildings, as a matter of fact.
Quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
If you look on the...
The courthouse is there. I see that right away.
If you look south of the courthouse, like the Kenmec building, now it's that building... do you see where the
I do see it,
is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a house. It's been expanded now into their business. Yeah, with additions on the front and the back.
It's a real prominent, focal point.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you go down up Main Street and you come to Main and Penn, there's a doctor's, there used to be a doctor's office on the northwest corner, and behind it is a, looks like a water tower. And in research of it, found out that, yeah, it was a tower. Now, I had those people that own that, Mitchell, told me it had to do with manufacturing bullets, but other people told me it was a water tower, so I'm not sure exactly what
I see it here now. That house, I think, is still there, but there's not a tower on it anymore. There are several prominent churches that pop out because, you can see the steeple.
Right. And then when you go over to Brady Street on the right up there, the first street you come to, right on the corner, now the trees hide it on the right past that Brady Street. Mr. Lutz lived in that home, Joe Lutz. And
not too many homes up Brady Street like there are today. Oh, there's the old Jefferson Street School.
Yeah, that's right.
Which
that's
is now a...
playground,
a parking lot on a playground,
My brother was in that school, my little brother.
Right next to the Little Red Schoolhouse. But, wow, I didn't realize how big that building was. And holy moly, that was a monstrous building.
And then if you look down in the, on the right-hand side of that print, the old Franklin Glass, now they called it, I have to get my notes out, but... I think it was called Standard something, but it was Franklin Glass was
there. Oh, I see it now. I couldn't find it for a minute. There was a huge fire that burned down a long time ago.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That whole facility. That's over now where in the area of Father Marinero Park over there on the south side.
That's right. Yeah.
That's the first time I've seen a depiction of how big that plant was. That was monstrous.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the first Butler print that I did, it was on this parchment paper, and it was large. And it was, I think, 18 by 24. And I decided to make it a little bit smaller. And then the print that the newer one I have, it's exactly what it looks like, except the size is just a tiny bit less than the original. Because I tell people, they said, boy, is this an original print? I says, no, this is a reproduction. I let them know that because if it was original, it'd be worth $1,500, $2,000 maybe, to the
right buyer. It's also slightly colorized, kind of like you used to see... portraits back in the... I've seen some stuff that my mom saved from the 50s where it was actually a black and white photo, but they would tint it,
It's called a wash.
Wash, is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's a wash.
Very attractive. Well, listen, you also have, and I've got to talk about this because these are This is a photographic montage of several parts of downtown Butler. I have seen these photographs before, but I've never seen them all together on one poster.
I have the negatives of the original photographs. They were about 6 to 7.5 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to get them reproduced, there's only one company in Western Pennsylvania that can do it. And he really charged an arm and a leg. And I decided that I'm going to do it in three segments because it's expensive to make those roll-long pictures. And a few of my friends wanted those long pictures, and they had them made from that man.
The best way I can describe this, folks, to you on the radio, obviously you can't see them, but it's like a fisheye lens, you know, what that looks like when you see a fisheye picture. Right. Let me just take a look at the bottom one here. On one end is the courthouse. You can see the courthouse. And then you come down, and there prominently kind of in the center is what was the Troutman Building. It's now a cycle warehouse. That building's still there.
And do you see on the side of the Troutman Building, do you see that it looks like paper hanging up from the window?
Yeah, what is that?
Well, that's Worsley's first location.
Wow, wow. And then there's, there's Benson's Clothing Store. I can remember that when I was a kid. And all the way down to what's now the Pittsburgh National Bank building. It was Union National Bank. But all of that's in one long picture, kind of a fisheye view. And then, look at this one up top. Well, this is facing the other side of the street. Yeah. If you go down to the far end, all the way down probably 300 block of North Main Street, and then down you come down to Blatt's Auto.
Right.
Blatt's
right.
Auto. Davy and Hilliard Drugstore. That building's still there.
You know, I could tell you something about Davy and Hilliard.
Diamond Park. Oh, and the old Nixon Hotel.
Yeah.
For those of you who have never seen how big that was, it was a monstrous complex. And then what's this top one here, the third and final print? This is further up North Main Street.
Right, that's right.
Fisheye view with the old PNC Bank building. It's now the Working Man's Store.
Right.
Israel's, what was Israel's? Oh, the Men's Store?
Men's Store.
And then further up the street on the corner there, what's now the Butler Brew Works. And that was a series of drug stores in there.
Right.
And on up the street. These are just fantastic pictures. Do you know, is there a date on these? I can tell from
1943. It's right up here on, let's see.
I can tell from the cars that it's old.
It's right here at 1943.
Wow.
You know, when you mentioned the Davy and Hilliard,
mm-hmm.
I was 12 years old, and I said to Mr. Hilliard, Mr. Hilliard, if you ever go to sell all these antique apothecary cases, I would be interested. And he goes, aren't you the little entrepreneur? And I says, I am. He says, you don't even know what that means. And I said, I'm a wheeler and dealer. And he says, that's right. And you know what? 25 years later, I get a phone call from Isidore Cohen, a wealthy Jewish man in Butler. And he says, I own the buildings here, and how soon can you be here? Well, I had a business at the time, and I put a sign up, emergency, I have to leave, you know. And I go down, and he says, what will you give me for everything in here? And I says, I'll give you $1 for everything. And he said, $1? And I says, yeah, but I'll have it out of here really quick.
Also, the drugstore had gone out of business, and he wanted to clear the building?
Yeah, Equibank was going in there.
Ah, okay.
And he says, well, if you can do it quickly, I'll give you 4 weeks to do it. And I says, I'll do it in a week, but I need the keys, and I need to have access to it. And I'll give you an insurance policy so you know if anything would happen. And then I had I was in the Army in Grove City with the artillery unit,
mm-hmm.
just started. And I conned them into giving me two deuce and a halves. And that's how we loaded it. Now, that drugstore, the soda fountain wasn't supposed to be part of that, but everything that's screwed in actually becomes property of the owner. But you know what? I remembered Mr. Hilliard saying that he promised that to someone, and I said, Mr. Hilliard, I thank you for remembering me. You give that soda fountain to the other person.
Nice gesture.
Yeah, and
now this building is currently the Butler Symphony
yeah.
Association building. Is this print of these three long fisheye views of Main Street, is this available, Chuck?
Yes. Oh, yes, sir. $5.
$5 for this one too.
Yeah, I'm selling them for $5 a piece because you know, times are rough and. You know, I want everybody to have the opportunity to buy them.
This is a treasure. This is, I could sit and look at this for ages.
Oh, I know. It's really neat.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something like the building of PNC. You know, when PNC moved in there, they covered up the ceiling because underneath that drop ceiling, it looks like the Grand Concourse.
Mm-hmm.
It's all stained glass. It's beautiful. And...
it used to be a hotel, too, someone told me. I don't know whether it's the same building, but on that site, on that corner, there was once a hotel. In fact, I've seen a picture of it from the Historical Society.
Right?
Yeah. Again, I don't know whether it's the same building or they tore down the hotel to build this. Listen, I need to take a break to tell you a little bit about one of our sponsors, and that's Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center, located just off Newcastle Road behind the Kings and Villa Grande restaurants. They're in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex there. Phone number 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler packages your items for shipping. Really convenient and very fast and very affordable too. I've utilized their service. You can ship any way you want, U.S. Postal Service, or if you'd like to go UPS or FedEx, they'll do it. Package them up and ship them out. They also offer other services, copying, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. They've got an official notary. You can even pick up a lottery ticket or a greeting card. Open Monday through Friday, right behind Kings and Villa Grande Restaurant on Newcastle Road in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. We'll be right back.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Did you buy a car, truck, or SUV last year thinking you were going to get 0% or some other low-rate finance offer and then drove off the lot with a much higher rate? Don't worry. Armco Credit Union has the solution. Refinance with us and get a 60-month loan on a 2016 or newer vehicle for just 2.24% APR. We've got low rates on older models, too. It's never been easier to join, so call any of our four branch locations today or visit us at armcocu.com for membership and rate information. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, Dave.
Welcome back. We're talking with Butler businessman Chuck Thomas, who has reproduced some marvelous things here. First of all, an 1896 print of an artist's representation, a bird's eye view of the city of Butler as it looked then, and then these marvelous three long bird's eye photographs of Main Street, both sides of Main Street in downtown Butler, from 1943. And before we wrap up here in just a minute, we'll give you contact information if you're interested in either one of these prints. They're $5 a piece. You had an interesting story, though. We don't have much time to talk about it, but you found a valuable print once in your research that you donated.
Yes, I discovered this print in an antique shop in near Zilli Noble, and it had a broken frame, and the lady wanted $125. And I said, well, how can you sell it? The frame's broken in the corners of the frame. And I bought it for $65. And then I called the Library of Congress, which I have a real good connection there. And he said, I'm going to tell you where to go to get offers on that, but don't sell it until you talk to us. We don't want you to sell it. And to make a long story short, it turned out to be worth $58,000.
Wow.
It's the Library of Congress didn't own it. Because it's one of the rarest of all Birds Eye City drawings. And at the time, I was doing real good, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to do something right. And I said to Dr. Jim Flatness, he was worked in acquisitions, and I said, Jim, I want to donate this to the Library of Congress with the understanding they could never sell it, and if they ever display it, I want, you know, historical graphic arts in my name to be associated with it.
A wonderful gesture.
It was $58,000 was the print.
Well, listen, I want to give the contact information again for people who might be interested in buying one of these prints, $5 a piece. First of all, your email address again, Chuck.
C like Charles, M like Michael, T like Tom, A like Apple, M like Michael, T like Tom, at gmail.com. And then my phone number is 724-996-6218.
These are interesting and fabulous prints. Thanks for bringing them in.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Nice to talk to you today.
Okay.
And we thank our previous guest, too, Bill Gordy, with us from Bushy Run Winery. That wraps up our Inshear Turn program for today. No Penguin hockey this week, not until after the All-Star game, which is this coming weekend. I'm Dave Malarkey. Hope to see you tomorrow on It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.